Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
And a baby.
And I have a baby today.
She's bouncing and happy. This is her first podcast. Do you have anything to say?
I'm sure she will at some point, but she's currently not saying anything. She has found her voice, and so she makes this sound that is like, it sounds like she's crying. It's like, sounds like she's crying and maybe in pain. And oh, there she goes. And it's just her happy sound. She's like, ah! And I'm like, oh. She's like, yes, mother, you speak in my language.
Yeah, I speak well.
So she makes like these sounds and I'm like, well, one, that's adorable, but two, are you okay?
Her just okay. The cheeks.
I know, she's very luscious. You can see her cheeks like from behind, which is like, it's so fun. But yeah, here we are, bouncing, holding a baby, hanging out in the closet.
Everyone, applaud for us because we just sat and mapped out days that we are going to be working. These are the days that we publish. Here's the days that we're doing videos. Good job, us. Look at us.
We've only been doing this for how long? And we've just now
created
an episode map and a calendar. We've created a calendar with both of us on it. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think we've been raw dogging this.
We're doing our best. That's it. That's all we can do. What are you doing? My best, okay? Yeah. I hope you guys have been liking the format so far this season, because I was telling Kim before we actually started recording, I'm really liking it for a few reasons. One, it's going to make our episodes with guests kind of flow a little bit easier, but it also puts less pressure on us to get people scheduled. And so it makes it a little bit easier for us to actually get these episodes out in a timely manner. That's something that we kind of ran into last season. But it's also, we have a lot to talk about. We found our voices as well. And it's not going to take away from the interviews to have our cross conversation before.
I also like that we are going to be able to kind of dissect things in real time from the conversations that we've had. We'll hear some of your feedback because we're only going to be recording the episodes like this within the week before they come out. So they'll be pretty quickly turned around. It'll be very much what's happening on the ground in our homes and in our lives.
Yeah, that is fun. And I think it'll be fun to also talk about moments from the episodes because we pre-record these. So whenever we are getting ready to post them, we're very often going through the episodes again for editing purposes, for creating content. And so it'll be fun for us to come back and revisit the interviews and talk about them with you guys too. So hopefully that's something that you guys will enjoy.
Well, in just the same way that last week we had Veronica on, but that was something that we had pre-recorded a long, long, so it seems like a long time ago.
Long, long ago.
But it's great because there's so many things from that conversation that we have interspersed with our own lives since then, like since that interview ended, that we've talked about or shared or just how we integrate that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that aspect, I guess. I loved that conversation as we were going back through the notes. It's like, oh my God, yeah, that's right, that's right. One thing that she said that did stick with me that I added to my calendar right after was, does your calendar reflect your goals? And I know you couldn't recall what that was immediately, but that one stuck in my brain because what's my big, is it hairy, scary? I always forget. But the big goal, are you allotting enough time in your calendar towards that? Or does everything else get in the way? And that's something that I've tried to be really conscious about. And so to go back through and see that, and then we'll get to clip videos from it, it's just really cool. The other thing that I noticed, because we're recording in summer right now, is like, ooh, that was the dead of winter when vitamin D did not exist.
Yeah. I haven't looked at the video yet. I haven't edited the video for that yet. So I'll be interested to go back and look at that because I'm sure I will have pregnancy face.
You are in pain too. Like,
yeah. Uncomfy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've realized through going to meetings with my husband, like medical appointments, legal appointments, things like that with him, is that I really have found the adaptations needed for ADHD without medication for me, that work for me without being medicated. So it's like I have taught myself how to, it's almost like when we're recording the episodes, we can mark clips digitally. Yes. So that we can come back to it. It's like I can do it in my brain now. So when we're having a conversation, I'm like, okay, mark that. If I have paper, I'll write it down. But I'm like, mark it and we're going to circle back to it. Or like I can give people the Cliff's Notes version. So I can be like, okay, marked. We're coming back. We're revisiting it because I have to do it so often. It's like I now have that adaptation that I can walk away mid-recording and I can come back and be like, and go.
I think that's awesome though. And to know that about yourself, I have also found if I'm trying to write my notes in my phone, it doesn't go well because the minute I open my phone, there's a million other things and then I get sidetracked. I have to write it down on paper. It cannot be digital to just rely on. Now, I can make lists digitally and check them off, but if it's something that I have to get done, it's got to be paper.
My to-do lists have to be, because we've tried another thing like with the podcast that we've tried is we've tried like digital shared to-do lists and we don't do anything with them. We ignore them.
They look like they would be great for some other people. It
seems like a great idea for some people, not for us. So presents a challenge whenever we do everything virtually, but we're figuring it out.
Let's take a step up onto our soapboxes, shall we?
Oh. Oh. Which one? Are we doing toxic positivity today? Or are we doing that one? Banging people over the head with the Bible? Which one would you like to go to first?
Well, I really do want to talk about the religious stuff, because you keep getting these comments on your videos and I've heard this so many times and it's a question that I get asked afterwards sometimes and it's about forgiveness. Forgiveness is more than saying sorry. And I think I've sung that here before. However,
I specifically was asked about it on a video. Have you forgiven your captor? Do you not that you have to, was the way they worded it.
Mm-hmm.
As we will say multiple times, approach things with cautious optimism. I choose to believe that most comments left for me are done so with good intentions. So I didn't take that as you have to apologize or you have to not apologize. You have to forgive someone who doesn't apologize. And so my video was essentially, I personally do not feel the need to forgive my captor. And I can't necessarily articulate why that is, but my conjecture is that I simply don't allow him to take up enough space that I feel the need to forgive anything. So he does not have that level of control over me where he affects me to the level that I need to forgive something. And I differentiated it because I said there's a difference between resentment and holding on to that, because that does hurt you. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's something that you work through in therapy. And forgiveness. Forgiveness is for the other person. Resolving your resentment is for you. And so that's essentially the video that I made. And someone commented and said, but you can't get into heaven if you don't forgive people. To which I very spicily responded with, please, by all means, give me the verse. Give me the verse. Because nothing pisses me off more than, as a religious person, as someone who believes in the Bible and goes to church, nothing pisses me off more than people banging people over the head with the Bible and saying, well, you can't go, your eternity depends on you forgiving someone. Are you freaking kidding me? First of all, if someone has told you that, that is a straight up lie. One, you don't have to forgive anybody. Two, your soul is not dependent on that. Like, whether you go to heaven or hell is not dependent on that. The Bible simply states you have to believe in Jesus to go to heaven. That is it. So that's my stance on it. Kim, go.
So I am going to represent those of us who do not subscribe to a religion, or maybe their beliefs are not into organized religion in any capacity. I feel like, so for those of you who don't know, I was raised Catholic. Like, I was confirmed into the Catholic Church. My first marriage was a full Catholic mass. That's a whole other episode. But I don't have any religious ties. And quite frankly, the more that I learned academically over the years, the more I separated myself from any kind of organized religion, because in my mind, organized religion with that much power over anyone's thought process, power concentrated is power abused. And we see that over and over and over again. So while Kara holds a lot of beliefs about, you know, her faith, and that steers a lot of things, I'm over here like, thank goddess I have Sundays fully to myself. And it's a fun contrast where neither of us are trying to negate what the other is saying. But Kara shows me that you can be a faithful religious person and not be an asshole. And that's the biggest problem that I had for so long, is people that were trying to shove their beliefs or insecurities or principles down my throat because it would make them feel better about how I'm living my life. And I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. So when people throw out Bible verses or things like that, I automatically turn off. And I don't know if there are many of you out there like that too, where I'm just like, nope, this is not the conversation for me. And I'm not going to back up a conversation about here and now with real people, with whatever you're relating to in a very, very old, and in my opinion, outdated book. No. Katie Ray from last season did a really good job talking about religious trauma as she was part of a cult. You can go back and listen to that episode. She does a phenomenal job of laying that out and what that means for children and adults going through that and navigating it. I think my big thing is purity culture. And I know that this is a whole long conversation that we're going to get into. But when we start to dissect what a patriarchy looks like, it's not that all men are bad. Men are fine individually. But that power concentrated that they benefit from is very woven into the fabric of everything that we do every single day. And once you see that, it's really, really hard to look away. So when I think about purity culture and the expression of you should feel guilt, you should feel shame, you should feel all of these different things for something that somebody else did to you, get fucked. No, I'm not going to subscribe to that. I'm not going to engage with it. You don't get to tell me that based on your insecurities and whatever you are subscribing to. I'm not going to listen to it, and I'm sure as hell not going to let my survivor, followers, allies, whoever, take an ounce of that onto themselves. There's one person that is responsible for those crimes, yep, and that's who should feel the guilt and shame. Whether or not I forgive that person does not matter a bit. I don't give a shit. I forgive the girl that I was that had her life stolen away from her and how she chose to cope. That's the forgiveness that I care about.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I have seen that's been interesting, but I posted about it on my Instagram stories. I posted about this whole topic and I said, you know, for anyone who has been told that you should feel guilty or that you should forgive someone or that you have to get into heaven, that's absolutely a lie. And we literally just recorded this episode. You will hear it later, but it reminds me of a conversation that we literally just had. And she said, you know, people were taking parts of her book and they were, you know, cherry picking those and using them to assault her with them, you know, which is something that happens to survivors. It's something that, you know, anytime you're taking something out of context, that's one of the big things that I have learned through my adult exploration of being religious, is that you cannot take a verse out of context and then use it. And I think very often people in religion, in like religious cultures, will take a verse out of context and they will use it. We see this in the media all the time. We see sound bites and clips being used from whatever celebrity, and they're taken out of context. And it's like, so the verse for forgiveness that was quoted, it was taken out of context, and it's just not indicative of what is being said. So, you know, I think finding a good resource or a person who can kind of back that up is helpful if you don't have the experience yourself. But one of the things that I have seen is I actually had several religious experts and pastors and various people reaching out to me after I posted that and saying, yeah, you're absolutely right. That person was wrong. That is not what religion is about. That is not how you get into heaven. And also, yeah, how are you going to say that, like, there's all of these sins? So how are you going to say that someone who sexually assaulted someone, hello, that's a sin. Someone that sexually assaulted someone can't get into heaven because they sinned, but also because you can't forgive that person you sinned and you can't get in. That just doesn't make sense. And I can't believe in a higher power. I can't believe in a God that would not have some accommodations for that. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. So
it's a tool of oppression. And I think that that is my biggest issue with any kind of organized religion, is that they are taking away your autonomy to think about what you want to do, what you want to pursue, who you are as a person. If your religion is telling you that you have to fit in this box to get into heaven or to go be reincarnated or whatever it might be, what are the aims? What are the goals there? Because they surely aren't for you and your healing and your well-being. Those are for somebody else, and that is concentrated power. I also...
If that ain't a fucking segue, Kim.
Well, first of all things are possible through God, so jot that down.
But like, that's not a segue into the other topic of toxic positivity. Like, anytime someone is trying to control you and tell you who and what you are, what you can say, what you can feel, it ain't for you, dog.
Who is the one that is benefiting off of someone else telling you how to act, feel, do? Who's the one benefiting from that? And when it comes to toxic positivity, it sure as shit ain't survivors. You have more to add, because this is something that I think more and more people have recognized and are willing to call out, yet it still permeates everyday life and what is expected of us, especially as women.
It's so frustrating. And I think we see it mostly on social media, but there is a bleed over into our day-to-day lives, because this is something that I've struggled with for a long time as I've unmasked. So the older I get, the more I stop masking. And so I remember when I was still working at the sheriff's department, and I would, you know, pass someone in the hallway and they would say, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I would just say, "I'm okay," because I'm not going to mask it. And they would be like, "Oh, just okay. Well, what's going on?" I'm like, "Well, you don't want to know." Right? But it takes people aback, because we are not used to having authentic conversations. And I think that's at the detriment to people who are going through difficult things. Because when my primary issue with the toxic positivity culture, it's this idea of what we have all heard, that social media shows everyone's highlight reels, right? And so you may see people sharing their toxic positivity and think, what is wrong with me? Because I can't just move on. I can't just put out good vibes. I can't sugarcoat everything and just be positive. And I hope that you know, you guys who are listening, you guys, you people, everyone, our listeners, all y'all, I hope all y'all know, for the people that can't tell the difference between us, maybe I should just start talking in my Southern accent. So I hope that all of you know that we are about the authenticity. Because we want you to feel seen. We want you to begin to be able to heal and uncover new things and learn and grow. And I think that talking from a place of authenticity, as opposed to only showing the positive, is where healing starts.
Very much so. I'm going to pop in here with my non-regional diction, which I have seen now more and more. If people talk about a normative American accent where there is no regional dialect or anything that could be construed as something that could be stereotyped, it's Colorado, Utah, I think Washington goes in there too, Oregon. I don't know. There's a lot of these that you can't tell where they're from exactly based on their accent. Now, I have things that creep into mind that'll come out about like Chicago or Illinois if I spend a lot of time with my family, because they are all from there. So yeah, I learned about non-regional diction and your news anchor voice or your customer service voice, which, have you seen the video of Paris Hilton switching between the two? Not to get on Paris Hilton again this episode, but I will never not like,
no, woo! But I have to tell you, even the way you say Colorado, that one.
Colorado?
Too, just so you know. Yeah. I think most people, it's Colorado.
Oh, well, we say it right. So.
I mean, I would believe you over anyone else because you live there. Yeah, you know, like, I'm not going to ask anyone to criticize how I say y'all.
Say it again, how you say it?
Colorado.
Colorado? Because we're rad. Like, yeah.
You say, yeah,
Colorado.
Colorado. That is my curse, yes.
That,
I have learned that it's funny because if you watch videos of me as a child, I very much had a strong Southern accent. Somewhere along the way, I don't really know where it was. I remember being in high school and taking drama and my drama teacher saying, where are you from here? Because you don't really have a Southern accent. And it will sneak in from time to time. But I think for the most part, I generally do not have one. Maybe it's because I have to think about what I'm saying and I have to enunciate. Because if I don't, I have marble mouth. Mm-hmm.
So I could go on about this for a long time. But given the time constraints that we have today and the fact that I straight up wrote notes, okay? Please clap. I wrote notes. Here's the topic that I have been dying to bring up that I get asked a lot. And I'm curious as to whether or not you do too. When we go and speak, there are always people that come up to us afterwards. I talked about this with my niece, recognizing that. And so many people are scared to ask this specific question in front of a group of people for good reason. And I get it. It's the concept of virginity. And there are a lot of people, especially children, who have a history of molestation that think that they are somehow impure, unclean, have shame, whatever it might be, that that's how they lost their quote unquote V card. And I want you all to just, if you're listening to it only, there are heavy air quotes happening in this conversation. We are going to talk about this from a heteronormative stance. I have some amazing resources that I'm going to link in the show notes, but for the intent of this conversation, it's penis, vagina, female presenting, male presenting, heteronormative conversation, because originally that's where this conversation started. We are talking long, long ago, biblical ages. Think about who is our savior. Virgin Mary gives birth to Jesus Christ in all of these lovely fantasy books. I mean, Bible, right? Got it. Well, let's get started here.
Funny that we're talking about this also in the same episode where we talked about religion. Continue.
Well, then that's exactly what made me start thinking about it. So many of you may be around the same age as us, but I feel like growing up, besides all of the weight shaming, body shaming things that we just had spoon fed to us as women, it was a heavy emphasis on virginity, purity culture, or when you're going to lose your V card. Was that your experience growing up?
Oh, for sure. We talked in an episode already about how there was not a sex talk in my home. So it was very much whatever I got from school, from my friends, whatever. So for me, I think now I'm from the South, and so it's the Bible Belt. And so pretty much everyone, unless they tell you otherwise, is a believer. And so there is definitely a purity culture, but there's also, it's kind of what we talked about also in the episode with Veronica, where I don't feel like our society discusses normal sexual activity. And so it's not so much that it's a discussion. It's just like this thing that you're expected to do.
Yes. And that's how I looked at it. Yeah, I looked at it too. I mean, public school or early 2000s, and I'm sure before, it's, oh, you have boyfriend, girlfriend, you're getting to first base, second base. Like, this is the next box that you check. And are you going to have these experiences? And we did have a good and ongoing sex conversation in my home. Awkward as they may have felt, that was still a conversation, and I knew that I could approach my parents if I had questions. But in general, with your peers, it's, oh, have you done this yet? And you're going to learn something completely different, which is normal and natural. The concept of virginity being introduced as something that is A, rooted in Puritan culture, patriarchy, and something that is heavily, heavily influential on rape culture didn't even enter my mind until like the last 10 years. I mean, this is still like something I'm working through a lot and reframing how I look at advocacy and the questions that people ask me. So here's the question. How did you feel either A, having sex for the first time afterwards, or what if, you know, I was assaulted and it was my first time? Does that mean I'm not a virgin anymore? Folks, so
yeah,
before heavy. I want to give a heavy disclaimer, not even a disclaimer, but just take a breath. If this is something that you feel is triggering you, take a big breath. We're going to dissect it, but I want to honor however you're feeling right now, because it's not about you. Those feelings are things that people outside of you, societal norms, cultures have placed upon you, because we are supposed to feel as though one magical act somehow devalues us as a person. It somehow changes who we are at our very core. And if it is a male presenting person who, again, quotes, deflowers a female presenting person, then they are lauded as, you know, you're great, you're manly, high fives in the hallways. Whereas the woman suddenly becomes a slut, a whore. Her value is decreased. Yet the thing that supposedly entered that person is what made you unclean. Are you kidding me? These things, they can't exist on the same plane. And yet they have for so long because we are not willing to have these discussions. Molestations and sexual assaults continue at a high rate for children who are born or brought up in these cultures because you feel shame. Somebody did something to me, but I can't talk about it because then my parents might not love me. My religion will think that I'm a slut. You're going to have to just cut me off here because I'm going to keep going. But when we talk about teen pregnancies, no one talks about the fact that males are the ones who impregnate the teens. And more times than not, they are at least, I will find the study, at least 4 years older than those teenagers. And yet the teen pregnancy, the female presenting person, is the epidemic? No, it's something right. far worse. And it is rooted in rape culture.
Okay, so I am currently rewatching One Tree Hill. And as I'm rewatching it, I'm listening to the One Tree Hill podcast with the three primary female actors. So that's Sophia Bush, Hilary Burton, and Bethany Joy Lenz. So they're very early in the show, there is a male character who has a baby. And so they are actually discussing the same thing. They're talking about how there's no, the mother of the baby is not even like mentioned. I think she comes in later. I don't remember. That's what they said, that she comes in later. But they were talking about how interesting it is because back then, I mean, the show was airing, I think, in 2002,
early 2000s.
Yeah. And so they were talking about how these conversations definitely, but how they were not had then and how interesting it is because if it was a female character, there would be these, you know, negative connotations. Mm-hmm. And how it was an interesting choice from the writers to write that part in. And so I kind of was marinating on it at that point and thinking about this difference in teen pregnancy and how it's viewed with a male versus a female. But one of the things that I just keep thinking about with this, because this is not necessarily something that I've had the time or energy to marinate on. Mm-hmm. The thing that I keep coming back to is this idea that it even matters.
It doesn't.
Like this idea that it changes anything at all. And it's just another one of the lies that we are told as a society, as women. And it leans in, I'm trying to figure out how to say this.
No,
obviously, it reminds me of the mentality of victim blaming culture.
There you go.
Because it's, what were you doing to ask for it, right? Mm-hmm. It has that same feel to me. And I think it's important that we talk about it because it really doesn't change anything.
It doesn't. Somebody else doing something to your body does not change your worth as a human. It just doesn't. One of the things that popped up that I was reminded of, you know, the rapper T.I., who's apparently going to be here in Greeley performing at the Stampede, if he hasn't already. He was on some kind of podcast show, whatever, being interviewed about the fact that he would make his daughter's OBGYN check to see if her hymen was still in place on her birthday to make sure that she was still a virgin. Number one, folks, like this, there's no science here. Okay, some people are born without them. If you have a female presenting body at birth, that does not automatically mean that you have one, that you are going to keep it intact. I was told, you know, you can lose it through sports. It doesn't matter. It is not an indicator of whether or not there has been a foreign object in your body. So again, not part of the value. But this is a conversation that we are having thousands of years after this concept is even introduced. And there are still places in the United States and around the world that do these checks with a doctor. And I listened to a podcast somewhat preparing for this, somewhat it was just on my radar anyway, that I'm going to link here. And they do a much better deep dive discussion into this, but I really wanted to bring it up because it relates so heavily to exactly what you're saying. It's victim blaming. And what you choose to consensually do with your body does not decrease your value, your worth, or your right to protect your body and to have that autonomy over your own body.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things that in the production of the movie we discussed is how do we want to approach this topic? Because that is a thing that I was asked. And I think my response to it and the way I feel about the entire conversation, my answer is it doesn't matter.
Yep.
And ultimately, that is the decision that my production company and I came to, is it doesn't matter if I was a virgin before or not.
No.
And that was, you know, my producer that I work with on these projects. He really is just fantastic, Joseph Fried. And he was like, yeah, it does not change what happened to you and that it was something horrific. And ultimately, I think that they made it seem like I was in the movie. That's a lifetime. That's a network decision.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's fine. But this goes along the same vein of people asking me, did you ever tell your parents what happened to you during those 18 hours? Or, you know, what happened during those 18 hours that you were there? And my answer is, it doesn't matter.
Right.
My parents never need to know what happened. The only people that needed to know were the investigators. That was it. We didn't go to court. So I believe that there should be some sanctity within consensual and non-consensual, any sort of sexual encounter, whether that is a sexual assault, a consensual sexual relationship, anything. I think that that is something that is insane. Like, that's the most private thing.
Yeah.
So why should anyone else ever need to know if you're a virgin? It's just so wild to me. And it reminds me of the 2000s when you have people asking Britney Spears if she's a virgin on the freaking Today Show.
Right.
And it's like, who cares?
Right. It doesn't matter.
Wild.
Well, and see, I am on the other side of that spectrum where I am fine discussing any aspect of that, because I knew fairly early on that if there was a part of what happened during those 2 hours that I wasn't comfortable with, that's something that I need to work on in therapy, because I didn't consent to any of that. I'm talking about somebody else's actions. It just so happens that my body was present. And I looked at it as, if I can talk about it, if I can share these things, then maybe it helps somebody else feel seen. And then it doesn't have power over me. But you know what? That was my personal choice. If somebody had asked me about a piece of it, like there's one piece that I think of that I still have that, like, my initial reaction is shame. My second reaction is what I've learned. It's, I can't remember who said it, but it's that your first one is what's you're conditioned. The second is what you've educated yourself about. I think it was about like stereotypes or whatever it might be. But when I was sexually assaulted, he tried to penetrate me anally. And I now am okay with discussing that. Before, I wasn't. It took me a long time to realize that, oh, that's just another part of something he did. And in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. It did matter that I tell investigators and that I told my forensic nurse, because she knew where to swab. And that beyond that, I wouldn't have had to say anything else except for I decided that I wanted to. And so Kara and I come from different camps on this, in the same vein of, hey, you get to make that choice. And that's where you leave it with survivors. That's how you leave it with anybody that is experiencing anything like this, whether they are choosing to or whether it's being done to them without their consent. What they choose to do after that, what they choose to talk about, or the resources that they want to seek is okay. It ain't your damn business.
Right. And all that to say, the answer to the question of, this happened to me, am I still a virgin? That's up to you.
Yeah. Yes.
It's up to you if it matters. If that's something that matters to you, then you decide.
Yeah.
And I would always say that losing your virginity, if that's something that is a value to you and it's important, then you get to decide what that means. And you can say, that is a consensual relationship for me that I choose to enter of my own free will.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure we are abundantly clear on our stance on that, yes, because I think that's something that, you know, we get asked a lot, and we've covered a lot of topics regarding sex and consensual relationships after assault. And so I hope that that gives you some clarity on where we stand and where you stand. I mean, realistically, yep, because I think that there's not a lot of good resources out there on these conversations. And so we always hope to bring you those things. And if you have further questions, comments, or concerns, please, by all means, reach out to us and ask us. And we plan to do at least one, hopefully multiple Q&A style podcasts that will be our in-between the interview podcast episodes. And so we want to be that resource. And if at any point you guys ask us something and we don't know, we'll figure it out.
Find the answer. We will.
Yeah.
So the TLDR is that if virginity is something that you believe in and it is important to you, it is not something that anyone can take. It has to be freely given.
Absolutely.
Ta-da. All right, folks. So next week we are going to have an awesome guest joining us. Tune back in then, but thanks for hanging out. It's been fun.
Yeah. Make sure you go and check out our Patreon and our social media. We are always trying to do our best to post clips and keep content updated on both of those places. Our episodes, the video version of our episodes, drop on the Patreon 1 or 2 days early. I'm trying to post them on Mondays while these episodes air on Wednesdays. So make sure you check that out. As always, links are in the show notes and on our social and our website. Thanks for being here.
See ya.
Bye.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Put it in reverse, Terry.
Throw on the afterburners.